ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I know that my name is not Tuchel, is not Conte, is not Mourinho, but I'm the manager of Manchester United. And it's going to be like this for 18 months or when the board decided to change.
That was Manchester United manager Ruben Amorim over the weekend. Well, his bosses have decided to change. Since Sir Alex Ferguson departed the Red Devils, six men have tried and failed to win the Premier League for United. And there is something fascinating about the red side of Manchester and the kind of perennial doom loop they find themselves in after the club's one-time Master of the Universe status. We've been here before, obviously, but this incarnation of the United catastrophe feels particularly messy. Can they escape the doom loop? I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Craig Foster is a former Australian footballer and analyst with Stan Sports Premier League coverage. Craig, why has Manchester United moved now, currently sitting sixth on the Premier League standings, on their now outgoing manager, Ruben Amorim?
Well, it's a simple answer. A quick answer is because they're a bit of a mess. Many, many times over the last almost 13 years since Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, their legendary manager, had left, they've had very little success since, and they just don't seem to have a clear direction as to where they want to head, the type of coach that they need, and even the way that they're going to manage that coach while someone like Ruben Amorim is in the seat. As you rightly pointed out, actually, this season, they're doing better than last. Amorim, I think, was pretty fortunate to last season. They only finished 15th, one of their lowest finishes in Premier League history. It was a deeply unsuccessful season, way below the previous or past standards of Manchester United.
Into the box, heads go up, cleared away. Garnacho, hook forwards, side netting. And Manchester United's night comes to a close. The full-time whistle goes. Manchester United have been beaten in Bilbao.
But he was retained, I think, largely because they've had such insecurity. They've had so many changes of coaches that eventually Radcliffe, the owner, decided that they needed to stick with someone. And it seemed to be paying some dividends. As you say, they were sitting sixth whilst they're a long way off Arsenal in first spot. They're only 3 points off fourth place. And yet here we are, we're again talking about another Manchester United manager sacked.
I mean, this is a Portuguese manager who arrived, I think, 14 months ago as a so-called systems coach. You know, he has a structure and a style of play, and I believe he spent in the vicinity of £400 million bringing in players to execute that exact system. So he was, you know, obviously rusted on and dedicated to it. I think he said at one point, not even the Pope could make me change this system.
No one's, not even the Pope. Something got... It will not. This is my job. This is my responsibility. This is my life. So I will not change that.
So to cut him adrift when it felt like at least you were taking steps to try and break a doom loop, it must speak to a real disconnect with what the manager is trying to build.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how well versed the Pope is in 3-4-3 or 4-4-2, which they played last week. But you're right, he was very much welded to what is called the 3-4-3 system, and he'd had success, great success, multiple champions titles with Sporting Lisbon back in Portugal, seen as one of the finest young, talented managers in the world. But he's had a very checkered time at Manchester United. You know, over that period, he actually has one of the worst records for many, many decades, something around low 30% of wins, the least percentage of clean sheets, the worst manager in recent memory in terms of percentage of goals per game conceded. So there has been some reasonably higher points. I wouldn't really say high points, but there's been many lows. So overall, it hasn't been, I think, an outstanding performance from him by any measure, certainly not up to the standards that Manchester United would have expected. And I think he struggled to manage a club of the magnitude of Manchester United. And that's really the key factor that we've seen, whether it was Van Gaal or Mourinho or Solskjaer or all of the, or Rangnick, the German. There's so many coaches who've gone through there in the last decade. It's just that the expectations of this club clearly do not any longer match either the level of players or the management from within the club.
Everyone needs to focus on United. This is one of the best clubs in the world. If you are here and focus on in a different club, something is wrong with you. But
there was a legendary Chelsea player who played then for Manchester United by the name of Nemanja Matic, actually, who said that the difference between the Chelsea of today and Manchester United was that when he played for Chelsea, it was all about the football. It was about winning. Whereas he said, whereas at Manchester United, it was all about marketing. And I think that probably sums up their last decade. And trying to turn that around, Ratcliffe was rightly saying that it's going to take time. I do think it is.
Well, under Ruben, what we've seen, I think, is it was difficult at the beginning, and I sort of get that. But then I think we've seen progress. And I think some of the players that we bought in the summer, you've seen them settle. It's quite tough, isn't it? You spend your life playing there. It's not an easy league to play in, and there's a lot of scrutiny.
But sadly, what happened was the tension between the long-term or medium-term planning of the club and the people responsible for that and the coach who has to take ultimate responsibility for results that are often born from the decisions taken by other people. That tension in English football at the moment is boiling over in quite a number of clubs, and they don't seem to be able to reconcile it.
You mentioned earlier Sir Alex Ferguson. I mean, he suggested in recent weeks it could be a decade before his former club could win another Premier League title. I just wonder, how much does this club still, 13 years, you know, a decade plus on, live in the shadow of Sir Alex Ferguson?
Yeah, it does, sadly, but that's not abnormal. You know, any club that has had, you know, immense success of that level, you know, they can find it difficult to get back there. The problem is that the longer that it goes on, that spectre now kind of looms over every season and every coach, you know, and every performance and every match. And now it becomes, well, Bruno Fernandes is, you know, not as good as Dwight York, or, you know, they lack a Roy Keane. And so everything is referenced back to that era. And it is damaging, I think, for sure, because, I mean, what he did say, Amorim, effectively, that the people behind the scenes have got to do their job. Let me do my job.
No, guys, I just want to say that I came here to be the manager of Manchester United, not to be the coach. And every department, the scouting department, the sport director needs to do their job. I will do mine for 18 months and then we move on.
But he basically said, well, this guy, the sporting director, Wilcox, is responding to Gary Neville, who's, of course, a legendary ex-player, and the media pressure.
I'm not going to get emotional because I don't think it's something that is helpful for anybody, but that was the baddest of the bad. That was the baddest of the bad.
So he effectively was saying that these expectations that even their legendary former players are constantly imposing on the club is not able to live up to them, and in fact is kind of diminished by those level of expectations. And I think he's right.
That was the deal. That is my job, not to be a coach. If people cannot handle the Gary Nevilles and the criticisms of everything, we need to change the club.
Sadly, the club had to at some point decide, this is the way that we think we're all going to be able to create a plan, commit to it, have someone in place who's capable of bringing it to life, and that is going to take a period of time, at least two seasons, perhaps more. Jurgen Klopp took over three seasons to win his first trophy with Liverpool, and that was 19 years between their last Premier League title. This is not that long, but this is perhaps even more difficult in some ways because of the expectation that lies over every single performance. So Amorim gone, now they've got Darren Fletcher, you know, one of their former players, in as an interim, and they seem to be on this merry-go-round again of trying to find someone as a saviour to rescue Manchester United instead of just having a clear plan and everyone understanding what type of manager it is that they need.
How much responsibility do the ownership and management need to take for that lack of clarity around planning? Because, as you say, it feels like a merry-go-round.
Yeah, they have to take all responsibility because they sign the managers. And if you look over the last 10 years, the variation in the type of manager that they're signing demonstrate that there's really no clear plan. The only plan is to try and win. But in trying to win, you have to understand how it is you're going to get there. So they change plans, basically season on season. And now that Ratcliffe came in, bought some of the club, he's got his own plan. It was only in the off season, in fact, when he said that, yeah, Ruben Amorim is the man and he'll be here for the next 3 years.
I'm not going to quit. I will do my job until other guy is coming here to replace me.
We believe in the way that he's carrying the club forward, and he was making marginal incremental improvements. You know, there's no doubt about that. That's why the timing of this is so ridiculous. And it's very clear that it's a breakdown in understanding, communication, or responsibility or autonomy between the sporting director who's tasked with trying to plan what the future looks like and the manager who has to actually win this week, which is an obligation for Manchester United. And that breakdown is just pure planning and management and strategy. Again, here we are when, in actual fact, for the first time for quite a period of time, they're in a very strong position in the league. It's a ridiculous signing at this point in time. Having said that, in my view, Amorim was not the long-term solution for Manchester United, because over this period of time, any top coach should have been able to demonstrate higher standard of performances than what Amorim was able to demonstrate, in my view.
Who looms as the man most likely?
You just don't know with Manchester United. Like, they could sign someone today. There is talk about Maresca. I understand that he's kind of firming as the most likely, you know, that people expect, because he's just left Chelsea. He was formerly at Manchester United. He's clearly hugely talented. Their performance against Barcelona recently, Chelsea in the Champions League, was absolutely brilliant.
Now James, now Estevao. Taking on Kabasi and getting past him. Oh, magnificent! That's what he's about. Estevao is a shining star.
The ridiculous nature of this is that I think Maresca might have been in October manager of the month, certainly November. Only a month ago, Amorim was manager of the month in the Premier League. Now he's out of a job. It just goes to show, like Australian fans, you know, would reflect on with Ange Postecoglou, not so much at Nottingham Forest, which didn't go well, but at Tottenham, the expectations and the cycle, the speed of the cycle of, relieving managers and bringing someone else in, this endless chase because of the magnitude of the money on offer now. If you don't do well and finish in the top five, you're looking at 100, 120 million euros loss in prize money. So the level of financial rewards between doing well and being mid-table or below is so vast now. It's getting greater every year, and that's speeding up the cycle of manager sackings.
Craig Foster, thanks for your analysis today. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Headlines. Travis Head is having some kind of summer. The South Australian just made his third century of the Ashes series as he posted 163 from 166 balls as Australia moved past England's first innings total in the final test of the series in Sydney.
Josh Tung's got the task. He bowls to Head on 99. He square drives away to the boundary. And Travis Head winds up his bat, signals to the pavilion. It's a dozen test tons for Travis Head.
Head might not win Man of the Series given the insane contribution from Mitch Starc so far this summer, but he's probably the most beloved cricketer in Australia right now. The sunnies, the swagger, the vibe, the runs, it's a lot in the best possible sense. That was Head's first ever test 100 at the SCG. He has tons at 7 Australian venues. Only 4 others can make that claim. Hayden, Langer, Warner, Steve Waugh. Esteemed company. For live coverage, you should check out the ABC Listen app. For the best analysis, search for the ABC Cricket Podcast with Ed Cowan and Corbin Middlemass. Novak Djokovic has pulled out of the Adelaide International. The Serbian says he doesn't feel physically ready to compete. The world number 4 remains focused on the Australian Open. And big contract news in the NRL with South Sydney star forward Keon Kolomatangi to join the Dragons in 2027 on a lucrative 5-year contract. St. George Illawarra described the recruitment as one of the biggest signings in the club's recent history. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Manchester United, The Overlap, TNT and Stan Sport for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.